Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
An Erio's original.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst-case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we figure out who's to blame for history's greatest tragedies. Today we're doing the Exxon oil spill. I did not know much about the Exxon oil spill until my friend Cece, who's going to be joining us later on, recommended that we do this as one of the tragedies because she said there was some drunk captain gossip about it. So I was obviously very interested. And that's why we're talking about this today. So here's what you need to know about the Exxon oil spill. The Exxon Valdez oil spill occurred in Prince William Sound, Alaska on March 24th, 1989. The Exxon Valdez, an oil tanker owned by Exxon Shipping Company that was bound for Long Beach, California, collided with a reef just 1.5 miles west of Tetilik, Alaska. The incident occurred at 12:04 a.m. local time and spilled 11 million gallons of crude oil over the next few days. Prince William Sound's remote location, accessible only by helicopter, plane, or boat, made government and industry response efforts difficult. The region is a habitat for salmon, sea otters, seals, and seabirds. The oil devastated one of the world's most beautiful environments and eventually affected 1,300 miles of coastline, of which 200 miles were heavily or moderately oiled. Both the long-term and short-term effects of the oil spill have been studied. Immediate effects include the deaths of as many as 250,000 seabirds, at least 2,800 sea otters, 300 harbor seals, 247 bald eagles, and 22 orcas, and an unknown number of salmon and herring. It is considered to be one of the worst human-caused environmental disasters. fun facts, aka death stats. The ship was carrying 53.1 million U.S. gallons of oil, more than 1,275,000 miles of Alaska's shoreline became contaminated. That is roughly from Seattle to San Francisco, almost two-thirds of the continental U.S. Pacific coastline. The Valdez spill is the second largest in U.S. waters in terms of volume released after the 2010 Deepwater Horizon BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. The fishing industry lost $400 million over 21 years due to herring alone, since oil debris impacted the animal on an embryonic level, stunting their ability to successfully spawn. Mechanical cleanup was started shortly afterwards using booms and skimmers, but the skimmers were not readily available during the first 24 hours following the spill, and thick oil and kelp tended to clog the equipment. Despite civilian insistence for a complete clean, only 10% of total oil was actually completely cleaned. In 2010, a CNN report alleged that many oil spill cleanup workers involved in the response had subsequently become sick. Environmental officials purposely left some areas of shoreline untreated so that they could study the effects of cleanup measures, some of which were unproven at the time. They later found that aggressive washing with high-pressure, hot-water hoses did even more ecological damage by killing the remaining plants and animals in the process. The accident took place on Good Friday. So today we have a very special guest joining us on The Alarmist. She's the one, she's the only, she's the Cece Pleasance Adams.
Hi. Thank you for the applause. That's really nice.
Now, do you go by Cece Pleasance Adams?
I don't know. I still haven't figured it out. I've been married for 5 years and I still don't really have an answer for you.
Sure. No proper title yet. If you were to meet the queen, what would you say?
If I were to meet the queen, I would say, hello, queen. I am Cece Pleasance Adams. I would say Adams.
Okay.
But then I might say Cecilia because my real first name is Cecilia. So I mean, it's the queen.
Right.
So I feel like you got to give her all the information. Right?
So we'll call you Cecilia today. How weird.
It's too weird.
Cece, so in this show, we like to talk about, you know, anxieties, what makes you crazy, you know, what makes you alarmed. And just as we were, you know, setting up, we were putting our drinks down on the table. You asked our producer, Amanda, if she had any coasters. Mm-hmm. And Amanda said, you know, no problem. You can just put it on glass, on the glass. It's not a big deal. And your response was...
I feel a lot more comfortable with a coaster.
I believe it was actually, I feel safer with a coaster.
I feel safer with a coaster. I really do. I feel like, I will say that my glass is now on the naked table. It's like there's nothing between my glass and the table, and it's making me very uncomfortable.
It's so risky.
It's so risky.
And, you know,
I feel like anything could happen.
Well, for our sake, I really hope that it stays safe.
Thank you.
And that we don't have a crisis or a disaster in our hands, you know?
Yeah, I could get sued.
I'll go ahead and go on record and say I'm probably not going to sue you. And now,
Thank you, Amanda. I can't speak
for my husband.
I know.
And as we learned from the McDonald's hot coffee case, yeah, there are a lot of frivolous lawsuits.
Yes.
Cece, I mean, and again, yes, living in fear of being sued is also very fair. Very fair. Yeah. And thank you for sharing that with us.
We have a litigious society.
Yes.
Yeah. Even our very best friends could sue us for leaving a mark.
You should
on
never
their
feel
table.
Safe. Never feel comfortable, mm-hmm, never feel safe, and never trust anyone.
I agree.
Yeah. Perfect.
I think that's a great way to live.
Also joining us today is our amazing fact checker, Chris Smith.
What? Chris Smith in the house. Yo, yo.
Cool, bro.
Dope.
Sick. For those of you who might be tuning in for the first time, Chris Smith is also my husband. So,
yo, yo. That's what I'm here for. It was in the vows.
It was not. So, Cece, let's get started in talking about this really horrific
yes.
disaster. Now, thank you for bringing it to my attention. I can't believe I was living my life not knowing about another terrible oil spill.
It's terrible. Yeah. It was the first big one, really.
It was the first big one. You're right.
Yeah.
Just so everyone knows, worse oil spills have happened after this.
Yes.
So if you think that things have gotten better, they haven't. Sleep tight.
Yay.
But this one, you know, I was watching some footage and now I'm remembering as I was watching some of the footage of this, you know, the poor sea otters and the seabirds. And it really is one of these like heartbreaking tragedies where, you know, it's difficult to stomach.
Yeah, I feel like it's harder to take. This is going to sound very callous, and I'll, obviously a human death toll is horrible, and
of course,
and worse or whatever. But like when you see a little seal covered in oil, it's like, oh my God.
Well,
it's hard to even joke about.
Yeah, because it's they're so innocent, and so this especially when it's a man-made disaster.
Yeah,
where it's something that could have been stopped, or you know, yeah, could have been stopped. They didn't ask for it, you know.
No,
it is really
they're
sad.
Not out suing people over. Coasters.
No, they're just trying to swim in the ocean.
They just want to swim in the ocean and eat fish. They're not jerks. They're not. You know, they're not calling anybody names.
So before we start blaming people for these poor little sea otters, and not to mention the quarter of a million seabirds that died.
Yeah.
And the economic impact
and
that it had.
And people who lost their jobs.
Yes,
and like,
on the entire area of Alaska, which, by the way, was incredibly significant. You know, the unemployment. Well, actually, one of those weird things was that a lot of these fishermen who lost their way of making an income actually ended up working to
clean up
exactly,
wow.
Which is so sad and terrible. But not only did it have this horrible economic impact on the town, but it also kind of it ruined their lives in a lot of ways, and the whole judicial process that happened afterwards. Now, Chris, maybe fact checking, you can look this up, but I believe that like suicide and it had an impact on the community in that way.
Bad stuff.
So terrible.
Yeah.
So before we get started on blaming people and putting them up on the board, I think let's talk first about the. Let's understand the logistics of how this all happened and how we even got here, actually. The Exxon Valdez is a boat, right?
It is a boat.
And it got the oil from the port, the Valdez. I keep calling it Valdez, but it's Valdez.
I feel like Valdez is probably
the proper.
Proper pronunciation, yeah. But all the whites say Valdez.
Well, you know, we'll pander.
Yeah, let's pander to the whites.
So the Valdez port, right? And that was connected to the Alaska pipeline. Now, the Alaska pipeline is a crude oil pipeline that goes straight down the center of Alaska. And the pipeline was built between 1974 and 1977 after the 1973 oil crisis caused a sharp rise in oil prices in the U.S. Now, Nixon supports this pipeline project even before the oil crisis. And members of Congress, under pressure from their constituents, create this Trans-Alaska Pipeline Authorization Act, which removed all legal barriers from the construction of the pipeline and provided financial incentives and granted a right-of-way for this construction. The deal was signed in January of 23 of 74, and along we go to build this pipeline. Now, of course, opposition, as always, there's opposition to the construction of the pipeline, and it's primarily coming from two sources, Alaska Native groups and conservationists.
Oh, those conservationists. Will they ever shut up?
So the Alaska natives, they're upset that the pipeline would cross the land traditionally claimed by a variety of native groups, but no economic benefits would accrue to them directly.
Of course.
A classic tale.
Classic tale.
And then the conservationists, those crazy people, they were angry at what they saw as an incursion of into America's last wilderness.
Yes.
Duh.
Duh.
So both oppositions like really held on, and they had legal campaigns to stop the pipeline. But and they were able to delay it until 73, until this oil crisis happened. And the government was like, well, we're stripping everything that stopped that from being built, the pipeline from being built, we're just going to shut it down. So this pipeline is run by Alyeska. And Alyeska is owned by the seven major North Pole, North Slope oil producers, including Exxon.
Santa on the board?
Yeah.
Bad red.
Now we know
bastard.
What he does the rest of the year. He runs the pipeline.
Yes. He's got to make a living somehow. Where do you think the toys come from?
Christmas is one day, whatever. You think he's making all those toys? No, he's outsourcing them. And then the rest of the time, he's working on the pipeline.
Yeah. He's working for Alyeska.
So Santa and Exxon, they're so they operate the Trans-Alaska Pipeline and the terminal, the Valdez Marine Terminal. And in the building of the pipeline, the oil industry promised but never installed state-of-the-art iceberg monitoring equipment.
Oh.
And then you're like, okay, well, why are we talking about icebergs, right? Well, it's Alaska.
Yeah. That's where they make them.
Waters. Yeah. That's the other thing Santa does.
Yeah.
He makes icebergs.
He does.
So it's the waters are full of icebergs. And the ships, we're talking ships, are going in and out of this terminal with oil. Now, the ships are supposed to stay on their designated shipping lanes, and that's supposed to be monitored by the Coast Guard. This is what's being set up. It's it's 1977. It's already built, and they're trying to set, how's it going to work? How are we going to run this? And the Coast Guard's going to make sure everyone's stays in their lane, technically.
Yeah,
and literally. And even when they're clogged with ice flows, they have to stay in their lane. So instead of diverting out of the channel, they were supposed to slow down.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, 10 years later, Exxon Valdez, it's 1989.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, you know, the Coast Guard is routinely just letting ships leave the channel to avoid the iceberg because slowing down was not something that they wanted to do because time was money.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. They got to get that oil.
Get that oil,
down,
baby.
Down to people's Lamborghinis in Long Beach.
It is true. It's going to Long Beach.
Yeah.
And for those listeners who don't know this, Amanda is from Long Beach.
Guilty.
And she has a Lamborghini.
We didn't know. A Honda.
So, you know, Amanda's mom is in Long Beach. She is probably just meeting Amanda's dad. She's driving around her Honda and she's got to go on a date, right?
That's right.
Yeah. She's got to.
She needs that gas.
You got to oil up before the date.
Yeah. And not right, Amanda's ladies? Mom. You got to oil up before the date, obviously. And also maybe score Coke. Not your mom, but like it was the 80s.
It's possible. But yeah. My dad, more likely.
Yeah, yeah. Vroom, vroom. So this is what's happening, or this is the backstory for this disaster. Okay. Now, it's 1989, March 24th.
Mm-hmm.
We're all getting ready for Easter weekend. And the ship is taking off. Now, the captain lets the Coast Guard know that they're diverting from the lane.
Mm-hmm.
And a few minutes after the message, the Coast Guard stops watching the ship. right? Okay. Well, the captain is, he's a 21-year veteran. He knows what he's doing. Then the captain goes to bed and leaves the third mate in charge of the ship and gives him instructions to maneuver around the ice. Now, this is the third mate.
Yeah.
There's the captain, there's the first mate, there's the second mate, and then there's the third mate.
Right. You're not playing with your first string here.
No.
Yeah. It's in the title.
Okay. So he thinks this is a good idea. Now, Captain Joseph Hazelwood, that's his name. He's actually from Long Island, from Huntington. Chris?
Yo.
Other Long Island bro? Do you know? You don't know Hazelwood.
I don't know Hazelwood of the Hazelwoods. No. I don't know Hazelwoods.
Okay.
I do know Huntington. Big town. Nice town.
Nice town.
Nice people from Huntington.
Yeah. But. Well, Joseph's living there, and he's actually widely reported to have been drinking that night. Of course, he's not at the controls when the ship strikes a reef. Investigators later learned that Joseph Hazelwood, the captain of the ship, had been drinking at the time and had allowed an unlicensed third mate to steer the massive ship that has 53 million gallons of oil.
Yeah, just take it over, buddy. You got this. You got this, Steve.
Now, this is what you told me, and you were correct. He was, he had a drinking problem. Mm-hmm. His driver's license had been suspended or revoked 3 times by the state of New York for alcohol violations since 1984. He entered rehab in 1985 at South Oaks Hospital in Amityville, Long Island. What? And following the rehab, he received 90 days leave to attend AA. And at the time of the Valdez incident, his New York State driving privileges were suspended as a result of a DUI arrest in September of 1988.
Wow. Wow.
So he literally can't operate a vehicle.
But Exxon's like, get in this big old ship, buddy. Go ahead. Drive a ship full of oil around.
And they knew.
Area. Yeah.
They knew.
It's bonkers.
If you can't drive a car, should you be able to drive anything else?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think right? so. I don't think you should be allowed to ride a bike, even. Okay, so this guy is presumably drunk. Okay, so this is what happens. It comes out later in trial that after the accident, 10 hours later, mm-hmm. they give Hazelwood a breathalyzer, and it's 0.061. Now, that's just under the legal limit, at least in California, which I think is 0.08.
Mm-hmm. 0.08, yeah, for driving a car.
Yeah.
Right. That isn't a multi-gallon tanker full of oil.
Sure. I mean, I'm pretty sure driving millions of gallons of oil should be a 0.00. That should be the legal limit.
Yeah. No Chardonnay for you.
No. Slap away that hand of the captain trying to get that Kim Crawford.
Yeah. No Kim Crawford for you, JJ.
So, it's 0.06. Okay, but this is what he admits happened. He drank two or three vodkas between 4:30 and 6:30.
Right.
P.M.?
P.M., yes.
Happy hour, I guess?
Yeah, he had the happy hour.
I feel like every hour is a happy hour for this gentleman.
And then he boards the Valdez at 8:25 p.m. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that is risky to have two or three, which you know is 5 or 6, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Yeah.
He adds them before he gets on the ship. Now, the accident happens at 12:04. Mm-hmm. So this is roughly 6 hours after the last vodka he had, let's say. And then 10 hours later is when they give him the breathalyzer.
Oh, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, so he definitely had some drinks in between, probably.
Well, here's...
Definitely, probably.
Well, there's two things that could have happened, right? He drank so much that roughly 16 hours later, he, when given a breathalyzer, he's still drunk.
Right.
Okay, that's how much he drank.
He still has alcohol in
his
system.
He's still buzzing.
16 hours after having two or three vodkas.
That's one thing, one that could have happened. The other thing that could have happened, which is what he claimed, was that he was sober when the accident happened. After the accident, he got so stressed out that he started drinking again.
Oh.
This is 10 a.m., though.
I do feel like this is a man who starts the day with a Bloody Mary or something. Sure. So it's not, I mean, I don't want to, I guess I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, even though I do think he shouldn't have been driving a large ship.
So you're saying it's okay? Yeah. I mean, if he did have the Bloody Mary, which we're assuming it's a Bloody Mary, and not like scotch that he has in his flask that he probably carries around.
He definitely has a bottle of scotch in his like in his desk, right? Or in a hip flask or striped to his ankle. Or
he has multiple flasks, one flask in every pocket.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the other thing that could have happened. We'll never know because no blood samples were taken. And they claimed that it was all mishandled. So the first thing was not to check the captain's, give the captain a breathalyzer. That was not the first thing that happened when the accident happened.
Which they probably subsequently did, right? I mean, that's probably a thing now. If you wreck a giant ship full of oil,
I mean,
you get a breathalyzer, maybe?
Probably. I mean, if there's like a, I know that if there's a, an airline, like a tragedy, a plane, some kind of problem with a plane. I think that's standard procedure, probably.
Yeah.
That they might even do that for car accidents. If there's a bad car accident, it doesn't matter if you're showing signs of being drunk or not. They still give you a breathalyzer.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. I mean...
Sounds right.
Yeah, yeah. I think I've read that.
We don't have to look it up.
We don't.
It doesn't matter.
Don't drink and drive, don't people. Don't drink and boat. Don't drink and drive. Don't drink and fly. Don't drink and bike.
Don't drink and bike. Don't drink and walk around.
Do drink and podcast.
Do drink. Yeah. But not too much. So, okay. Third mate. Now let's talk about this third mate. So, yeah. I'm sorry. We should have been putting people up on the board. What am I doing? Oh, my God. Oh. So what do you think? I think the captain has to go up on the board.
He definitely is very culpable in this situation.
Yes.
He left his post. He was definitely drinking.
I mean, you're not fooling anyone, buddy. So let's talk about this third mate now that we have the captain up on the board. Seconds before the tanker strikes this reef. Now, this is a shallow brief. I'm sorry, reef. And they're, of course, steering out of the lane and as they shouldn't have been. So the third mate, Greg Cousins, that's his name, Greg Cousins, he calls the captain and he tells him that the tanker is, quote, getting into serious trouble.
Oh.
The call is then interrupted by a crash.
Oh.
And the third mate, he later testifies this to the court in Alaska. He says that he and a helmsman, Robert Kagan, were at the wheel when the 987-foot tanker ran aground. And Mr. Cousins said that before he called, he began to believe that Mr. Kagan was not properly following his orders to make a sharp change in the ship's course. So,
right.
There's he some did drama.
It because that's what he told him to make that turn, but he did it too late. And that's why he hit the reef.
Right. So, exactly.
So the captain was like, okay, do this at this time. Peace out. I'm going to go have some bourbon. And the guy didn't follow orders. He wasn't.
Exactly. Yeah. So what happens is that the captain leaves him in charge and he says, he asked him if he felt comfortable with what we're going to do. And Cousins says, yes.
Yeah.
And then he said, Do you feel comfortable enough that I can go below and get rid of some paperwork?
Yeah.
And then cousin says, I feel very comfortable.
And by paperwork, he meant vodka.
Cousins is having a situation. So cousins, the Hazelwood, the captain tells cousins that he's going to be gone for just a few minutes and call him in his cabin when the ship starts making the turn.
Oh, okay.
And then Mr. Kagan testified that cousins panicked and grabbed the wheel in a futile attempt to avoid the jagged reef.
Oof.
He started making the turn and he grabbed the wheel and to help make it. I think he was kind of panicking then.
Yeah.
And he says that cousins then said he had never worked with Mr. Kagan before and had heard rumors that the seaman had problems with steering on another voyage.
Oh.
So there's like there's a drama and a history going on between the third mate and the helmsman. So it's like fourth and the fifth.
So the hot goss on the street is that Kagan has a steering problem.
Yes. And cousins, who shouldn't be steering, is getting mad that Kagan's not listening to him.
Yeah.
This is basically like Khloe Kardashian and her ex-boyfriend. It's like a third subplot on a Kardashian episode.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like what's happening to the Kim's makeup artist. It's like drama at home.
If they it's were like, suddenly put in charge of the entire Kardashian empire.
Exactly. Well, that has happened. It's called Khloe and Courtney Take Miami. Oh.
That's a classic. Khloe and Courtney Take Miami.
when there's no Kim.
Yeah. Talk about it. Talk about historical disaster. I mean, that should be an episode unto itself. Right?
Amen, sister.
So tell me who we're putting on the board. Are we going great cousins? What's happening?
I'm feeling cousins, and I'm feeling Kagan.
Yeah, because Kagan freaked out, right? Kagan's the one that...
Is the one he freaked out because he felt like Kagan wasn't taking him seriously. And Kagan had a bad reputation of being a bad...
Kagan was a bad steerer. And then cousins grabbed the wheel like a lunatic. Yes. And was like, let me take this over. And then he didn't do a great job.
But here's the thing. Kagan, your one job is to steer the ship. Yeah. And people on the street are saying you're bad at it.
Yeah. But he didn't think he was going to have to. He was like, no, I'm not going to have to do this. My Captain Drunky McPants is going
to. So just to clarify, I've got now on the board is the captain. We have great cousins who is the third mate. Is that right? Okay. And so he's the third mate. And remind me, what did he turned the ship too late? Or
well, the helmsman, who is Kagan. Kagan the helmsman. He's the one. It's unclear who turned the ship when. It felt like there might have been like a struggle.
Cousins was the one that was supposed to be in charge. Okay. He was the third mate who was supposed to captain left in charge.
Yes. Okay. And Robert Kagan's literally got his hands on the wheel.
Right.
Okay. So and Robert Kagan is the helmsman, and he's got an issue with steering.
Yeah.
Okay. We're all good.
So I read something. There was an investigative reporter, Greg Pallast, who said in 2008 that forget the drunken skipper fable. At the helm, the third mate may never have collided with the reef had he looked at his RAYCAS radar. So maybe the Raycus radar? Radar?
Raycus
Okay.
Raycus radar sounds like... a fun like sports team.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
So he continues, but the radar was not turned on.
Oh,
in fact, the tanker's radar was left broken and disabled for more than a year before the disaster, and Exxon management knew it. It was just too expensive to fix and operate.
Oh my God, Exxon, you have so much money. Are you kidding me?
Yes.
They can't fix their little iPhone on the boat?
Yes, probably like such an important... Now, maybe our fact checker can look up what a RACAS radar is. R-A-Y-C-A-S. I mean, that is just beyond.
That's beyond. That is cuckoo bananas.
I want to put Exxon on the board just for that.
Oh, for sure. Well, Exxon needs to be on the board.
I mean, we're going to talk about Exxon. Yeah. We have a huge bone to pick.
We have a turkey bone, a dinosaur bone.
So
the dinosaurs, P.S.
Yes.
Are responsible for some of the oil, so we should...
You know what? Let's put dinosaurs up on the board. Oh, so, beyond. I mean, I'm just, of course, Exxon is liable, and
yeah.
Like you have a ship like that has again 53 million gallons of oil. Fix the doohickey.
Fix the thingy. Fix the thingy. What are you doing?
Okay, so let's move on to the federal government.
Yeah.
Because I have a lot to say about possibly blaming the federal government.
Yeah. Nixon was... Well, Nixon was the one who relaxed regulations about put the pipeline.
Yes.
Said, yes, do the pipeline. Yeah. And also drill wherever you want and steer some ships through this beautiful, pristine area in Alaska.
Yes, that was all Nixon. And that was just a few months before the impeachment. I think it was, if I recall, it was January of 74. And I think the impeachment happened in much later. We'll ask our fact checker.
So the RACAS system is a computer-assisted radar collision avoidance unit which aids high seas navigations in guiding their vessels safely through congested water and all weather conditions. So yeah. It's
seems like an important
just
thing
a radar.
Definitely don't fix your collision avoidance. We should leave that broken. We don't need that, right?
It's just the beep.
That thing. That's right. Oh, we've seen it in all the movies.
Yeah.
What was the other thing you want me to look up?
When Nixon got impeached.
Sure.
Doesn't really matter.
So it's in 1979, the Alaska legislator. Okay, this is what's crazy. Okay, so 77, the pipeline gets built, finished, and they start using it right away. Yes, Chris? You look like you have something to say.
Yeah. Okay, so Nixon... On July 24th, the U.S. Supreme Court ordered him to comply. So on July 27th, 29th, 30th, 1974, the committee
74.
Approved three articles of impeachment against Nixon.
Okay. So this was a few months later. I don't know if that has anything to do with the pipeline.
He just hated the environment.
He hated. He was like, before I go, let me just burn the house down. Alaska legislator in 1979, 2 years after the pipeline gets built, is wants to adopt a set of measures that give the state a wide-ranging authority to regulate design, equipment, navigation, operation, certification, inspection, financial responsibility, assignment of oil spill liability, cleanup capacity, and responsibility for tankers entering Alaskan waters.
Oh.
So Alaska's like, okay, so now that this thing has been built, Exxon, all of these big companies have said to us, like, if anything were to happen, you know, we're going to take care of it.
Yeah.
Nothing is in writing. It's just, you know, we're coming in here.
Just trust us.
Trust us.
We're fine. We're great.
We're going to make sure everyone's certified. We're going to make sure all of these boats are inspected.
The equipment's going to work. Nobody will definitely not be drunk.
Captain will only have one or two vodkas a cocktail hour.
maximum of three vodkas.
Or minimum of three vodkas.
Yeah.
Minimum for sure. And Alaska's like, I don't know, maybe we should put this in writing, guys.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's our state. We should probably make these regulations for ourselves. So the oil industry then, mm-hmm. after they passed these measures, filed a complaint in the federal court against the measures, and the courts agreed that they were unconstitutional. What? They invalidated measures for double-hull tankers, giving the state power to regulate working hours and mandated rest periods, conditions for to navigate crowded shipping lanes, minimum deployment times for cleanup operations, and dictating the amount of equipment on board to manage cleanups. So they were just like, you know what? All of these measures. Okay, so this is the crazy part. All of these measures would have been useful/preventative with this situation mm-hmm. that we 10 years later.
Absolutely. And the federal facing. Government was like, nope.
The federal government was like, yeah, no, we don't. It favored in the side of the big corporation.
Of course.
Which is one of the saddest parts of this tragedy, because Alaska was, you know, they were trying to comply. You know, they're trying to be like a good sport.
Yeah.
They're like, we have all this oil and, you know.
We get it. We want the money and the profit and whatever. And we want to we want to enrich the community and the world and the rest of America with our oil. But just like, keep it cool, guys.
We just want to make sure, you know, that it stays that way. You know, it's like a cool, nice place we have.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the federal court's like, no.
Why would you want that?
Why would you put the bouncer in front of the bar?
Yeah, Exxon's going to be cool about this. Exxon's, you know, they got great ships. They're going to be great. Don't worry about it.
Exxon is very good people. They're going to...
Great people on both sides.
I just want to give a shout out to this. How do you feel about putting the federal courts up there?
Absolutely.
Because... Absolutely. Thank you, Amanda, for putting it up, because it's you're holding me back, bro. Are you holding us back?
Well, without getting too technical, and I don't know the specifics, uh-huh. but they deemed the measures taken by Alaska to be unconstitutional. So do we want to blame the Constitution? Because if the Supreme Court was doing, or the court system was doing what it was supposed to do, which is to uphold the Constitution. So if they're just saying, well, look, in the Constitution, it doesn't say that Alaska can come in and tell Exxon what to do. So is it the Constitution's fault?
But I feel like...
Blame our forefathers.
Yeah, I guess. But I also feel like that was the court's interpretation of of something that was maybe like their interpretation was wrong. So I think, yes, let's put the Constitution on. But let's also put the courts.
Yeah. The people behind inside the road.
The people who were possibly benefiting from... lobbyists and these big companies with lots of money. What's the big main one? The conglomerate called again? Alopecia?
Yes, it's called alopecia.
What?
As the
Are
fact
you
checker,
the North Pole?
I won't even look into it. No, I'm no. just going Santa to say Claus. Yes, it's definitely yeah. alopecia.
Are you talking about the Alyeska?
Alyeska. Yeah, yeah. The Koch yeah. brothers are part of that too, aren't they?
Oh, the I mean,
I'm pretty sure they are.
Would
I can be wrong.
I fear we're heading back toward capitalism.
I think we are. Yeah, I think we do. It's greed. It's definitely greed because they didn't want to fix the iPhone. They didn't want to fix the navigation system.
The 1989 iPhone.
The anti-collision apparatus.
Yeah,
the Brooklyn Raider, whatever he's called,
the Rakus
radar,
Rakus radar.
Yeah, but no, we should put man's hubris on the board because I feel like hubris definitely came into play here because the captain was like, "Eh, I'm fine," and then the third mate was like, "I can do this. I can totally do this. I can totally steer this ship. I'm cool."
We're definitely, I mean, I can't agree with you more. And Chris, if you could help us put hubris up on the board, yeah, that would be fantastic. So let's talk about this cleanup. This is wild. It took 3 days for anyone to do anything about the oil spill.
Ugh.
Exxon, who had said that if any accident were to happen, they would be in charge of the cleanup, said that they were flying people in. And meanwhile, the Coast Guard is just waiting to do something. Nothing happens for 3 days. The boat is just leaking oil for 3 days.
Wow, they didn't even plug up the hole?
No.
They just left it there?
It's leaking.
They just went to the bar? They went like...
And it's spreading. And then this is crazy. So at the time of the spill, most of Exxon's spill response barge was being refitted. So it was out of service.
Oh my God.
And much of the rest was buried under several feet of snow. Because again, Alaska.
Yeah.
4 days after the spill, as if things couldn't get worse.
Yeah.
4 days after the spill, a storm with winds of 70 miles per hour comes in. Hits the Prince William Sound and drives the oil onto the sand and the rock beaches, and eventually it spreads 500 miles from the site of the spill. So, I mean, it's just...
So Exxon goes on the board again.
Double Exxon.
Double Exxon.
And I guess we could put if we're blaming things, we can put the storm up on there.
Yeah, the weather.
You know?
Sure.
Because it's just so... incredibly upsetting. And then Exxon claims that the state had okay, so then this is what happens. Exxon is then saying that the state interfered with Exxon's attempts to clean up the spill by refusing to approve the use of dispersant chemicals until the night of the 26th.
Oh, because Alaska didn't want them to pour more chemicals on the chemicals?
But here's the thing, which Alaska then says that there was a long-standing agreement to allow the use. They were like, we allowed you to use these disbursements to clean up spills. Thus, Exxon didn't need permission to use them. And that, in fact, Exxon had not had enough dispersants on hand to effectively handle a spill the size created by the Valdez.
So they were just lying.
They were
Exxon
lying.
Exxon was like, yes, yeah, so we couldn't do it. And then they were like, no.
They're
bitch.
Like, you had permission this whole time.
Yeah.
And they're like, we're just waiting for the signal from the Coast Guard.
Ugh.
Disgusting.
Disgusting.
And then, of course... Alaska then says the Exxon eventually did a terrible job of cleaning up because, number one, they ignored the major oil deposits buried underneath the shore because there's oil now underneath.
Ugh.
And the chemicals they used made a show of cleaning up, but all they did was just disperse the oil and make it appear to have gone away.
Ugh. They're so despicable. They're so horrible. Oh.
So, of
It's like
course.
When you're got a whole plate full of food, do you want to go and play video games and your mom comes by and inspects your plate, you just mush it around.
Oh, yeah.
You flatten it out and mush it around. Yeah. You're like, "Look, I'm done."
Yeah. Or you put it in your pants.
Is that what you used to do?
Yeah, you just put it in your pants.
So, I mean, there's just so much here that Exxon did, because Exxon is then just what they're doing is trying to save face and just pretend essentially to be doing some kind of cleanup job.
They don't want to be seen as the evil corporate monsters that they are.
And then what they start doing is they start blaming the Coast Guard. Yes.
They said that the Coast Guard wasn't watching their radar.
Which
they kind of
weren't. They kind of weren't.
Yeah.
And they said that they had granted the mariner's license to the crew of the Valdez, and because they had given the Valdez permission to leave regular shipping lanes to avoid the ice.
Oh.
So there is some... The Coast Guard is somewhat at fault.
Yeah. You hate to blame the Coast Guard, but I guess
I think they need to go up on the list.
Yeah.
They need to go up on our list.
Sorry, Coast Guard.
So I like to also put a name to the blame sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Name to the blame.
and I found a pretty despicable character that we could, you know, maybe do this with. The name is Don Cornette.
Oh, he sounds terrible.
He is Exxon's top official in Alaska at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And I watched some documentaries where he's being interviewed, and I'll just read you his quotes.
Ooh, okay.
Okay. My feeling is, whatever you kill, there's plenty more of it, and it's going to come right back.
Oh, my God.
He goes on. There's a period there, but there are more sentences.
That's a great villain. Like, oh my God. Just an emotionless villain.
If you wrote that for a super villain in a script, like, people would be like,
Nobody would say that.
That's ridiculous.
Oh my God. It's too on the nose, guys.
Yeah, come on.
Let's give him some nuance. So he continues. If you don't remove the oil, nature is going to eventually remove it. But it's going to look bad for a long time, and the publicity is going to be horrible. You kill some little critters in the process, you couldn't possibly kill them all. So they're going to repopulate. That was one of his quotes.
Wow.
And we'll continue. So there are some transcripts from the night of the spill. Now, Cornette, Mr. Don Cornette, did not know that they were being recorded.
Ooh.
So there are some conversations that were had.
Oh, Don.
This is the night of the spill. Doesn't matter if they're really picking up a hell of a lot of oil. At this point, it makes a real bad impression with the public without any activity going on. An hour later, an Alyeska official by the name of Bill Howitt asks Cornette, so it behooves us to have everything flapping in the breeze that we can, whether it's catching oil or not? Cornette responds, yeah, absolutely.
Gross. Gross. Oh, my God.
So, I mean, it's fun. I feel good putting Don Cornette up on the board.
Yeah, Cornette or Coronet?
It's spelled C-O-R-N-E-T-T.
Cornette. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, I bet he has like a huge belt buckle. I bet he's like a belt buckle guy.
I did see him in the interviews. He's exactly what you would think.
No offense to a belt buckle guy.
No.
Googling yeah. Because
I love
Don
a belt buckle
Cornette
guy.
Belt buckle.
So, I mean, now that belt buckle's up on the board.
That's unfair. There's a lot of really good belt buckle guys. I'm so sorry. That was unfair.
Yes, and if any of you wear belt buckles out there, please forgive Cece for disrespecting your honor. Now, before we get to, you know, crossing off and really getting down to who's to blame, I just want to throw something out there. The transportation industry and Americans' reliance on oil. You know, the Amanda's moms of the world.
Thank you.
In her hot, hot Lambo.
Yeah. But seriously, you know, we are the transportation industry, you know, it runs on oil. We need to get.
You got to get to
places.
We got to
get there.
Yeah, you got to get from here to there.
We've got places to go.
But we refuse to carpool.
No. And we don't want to take a bus.
And we don't want
God
to take
forbid
a bus.
Public transportation be the answer.
Yeah. But the big oil companies are also responsible for our dependence on oil because, as we know from Ed Begley Jr., that the electric car was around and could have been available much sooner, but it was killed by the oil industry.
Well, there you go.
So, I mean, that's a whole other thing.
Give baby the bottle, right?
Give baby the bottle. Yeah.
Is that the right?
I don't know, but I like it.
You want me to run down the who's to blame? Okay.
Did you put the transportation industry?
I certainly did.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Who is to blame, Exxon oil spill? The captain, Joseph Hazelwood? Greg Cousins, the third mate in charge, the one in charge during the time of the crash? Robert Nagin?
Kagan,
the bad steer. Sorry, this is Amanda's chicken scratch.
Wow.
Number four, ExxonMobil, which I put times two. Because they're pretty bad. It's going to be hard to blame someone else. number five, dinosaurs.
I'm so happy that's
number okay. six, the federal courts. Number seven, the Constitution, question mark. Number eight, greed and capitalism. Number nine, man's hubris. 10, Coast Guard. 11, Don Cornette. And 12, lastly, Amanda's mom, AKA America's dependence on oil.
Oh, no.
We could take that again if you don't.
It's very unfair to Amanda's mom.
Just put Jan.
Jan.
Is Jan to blame for the Exxon oil spill?
She was driving a very sensible Honda, which I'm sure got good gas mileage.
But I will say that my dad at the time was driving a hand-me-down car from his father, and it was a gas guzzler. It was a Jag.
Oh. All right. So Amanda's parents
What's your dad's name?
Robert, but it was his dad's car. So maybe we should put my late grandfather, Bob.
Okay. Yeah. Let's put Bob.
Jan and Bob.
Yeah. Jan and Bob. Jan and Bob. America's dependence on oil.
So, okay. So we have a lot of possible.
Yeah.
Guilty. Let's start by crossing things off the list. I love the dinosaurs.
I feel like we can let the dinosaurs get are off the hook. I think.
Yeah, I mean it's they paid for it. Right?
They really did. They got
It's a retroact. If they hadn't died, they should have stayed alive. Is all I'm saying.
They should have stayed alive, but that wasn't their choice.
After the dinosaurs, I think should we blame the Constitution? Should we blame our forefathers?
I don't think so. I feel like
they were trying their best.
They were doing their
best. How could they have assumed that in 1989 this would be their words would be used against them?
Yeah. Yeah, they couldn't have foreseen giant ships.
The combustion engine hadn't even been invented. No, How could they have possibly known oil about oil?
They didn't know oil was coming. Okay, so that's off the list. Man's hubris, I mean, and greed and capitalism, concepts.
Yeah, conceptual. I think,
we can keep them for a sec, I think. Amanda's mom and her late grandpa...
I think let's let them off the hook.
Let them off the hook.
Out of jail.
You know, it's not their fault.
It isn't their fault.
They were born into this at this point.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So we're going to take that off.
Thank you.
Good news for the Lunds.
Yeah.
Now the captain, we've got the third mate and the helmsman. What a trio. I mean... I want to see if I could get like a visual on that threesome. I would love.
I hope that they've formed a barbershop quartet years later. A quartet.
But I think, the third mate, it's like being the intern and then being put to do, to fly the plane.
Yeah. It wasn't his fault. He was put in a bad situation.
He shouldn't have said that he was comfortable.
Maybe he should have said he wasn't comfortable, but we've all been there. We've all been like, "Oh yeah, sure, I could ride a horse."
Exactly. So, I'm going to take Greg Cousins off the list. And Robert Kagan, the bad steerer, the helmsman.
Yeah.
I'm a little more angry at Robert because he should have been good at his job.
Right.
But, I mean, dude, you have one but job.
I will say, like, Mariners could be a very gossipy bunch.
That's true.
And maybe that, you know, like, they could be. Maybe he pissed somebody off. Maybe he, like, flirted with somebody's wife. And they were, like, they spread that rumor about yes. him. So maybe it really wasn't that he was a bad steerer.
Look, I'm with you. I'm taking him off the list. I hadn't even thought of the gossipy Mariners. Exxon is up there now. Okay, so we've got the captain, Exxon, the federal courts.
Just fact-checking mm-hmm. the captain. Joseph Hazelwood, he was accused of being intoxicated, but he was cleared of this charge at his 1990 trial witnesses testified that he was sober around the time of the accident. That's just...
Oh. Okay.
But it was also that weird... blood alcohol level thing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That combined with he was tried.
Yeah.
So again, he was tried and witnesses testified of his sobriety. So that's all I'm just telling you what I'm finding online.
I
feel like, here's the thing. Alcoholism is a disease.
True.
As we all know, he shouldn't have been driving the boat.
True.
Because he had a suspended driver's license. So that is crazy.
Yeah.
He made some poor choices.
Yeah.
He's had a tough life, that's clearly. True. But who was letting him drive the boat?
Exxon.
Exxon, baby.
They put him on.
Yeah.
They're like, you're good enough.
Yeah. Go ahead, buddy.
So
I think we got to cross him off.
I'm
the
crossing
list.
The captain off the list.
Yeah.
As much as, you know, he should have known better.
Yeah. And he was definitely drunk.
Yeah.
Come on.
So I think that the federal courts, as much as I do want to blame them, and I do I do think that they have they are guilty in some ways of siding with, you know, the big corporation.
It was a despicable decision.
Yes.
I think we should censure them and then cross them off the list.
Okay.
Is that a thing that we can do?
I'm going to do is I'm going to keep them.
Okay.
And I'm going to cross greed and capitalism because you just can't blame that for this particular.
Right. It's a cause of a lot of things.
Exactly.
It's definitely a factor, but it's not the
but
factor.
Like we're all greedy. We all want money and we're all, but we still have a conscience.
Yeah.
And we're not doing, you know, we live in a capitalistic society and not everyone is making despicable decisions.
Yeah, we're not killing sea otters.
Exactly. So I'm capitalism is off the list. Hubris, man's hubris.
I mean, that's the cause of a lot of things.
Exactly.
But you can't. Yeah, I think it's too nebulous.
The Coast Guard and Don Cornette. I'm keeping Don Cornette. I mean,
Don Cornette, that guy. Oh
what a
my
despicable!
Gosh,
despicable.
Is he still around? Is he still available? Is he single? I guess is what I'm asking.
Cece loves a bad boy.
Yeah. I always wanted to make out with a supervillain.
We've got our fact checker on it. But while he's
I'm looking on Facebook right now.
Check Tinder.
I think that we can cross the Coast Guard as much as they are at fault in many ways. They should have been looking. They shouldn't have let them get out of their lane, but they were tricked by the Exxon. It comes back to Exxon.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, it sounds like it was a little Keystone copy in there that night, but also I'm sure they were tired and overworked and whatever. And steering out of the lane I'm not a seaman, but it does make sense to me that like when you have an active glacier, because there's a glacier right there with like that's calving and like throwing icebergs into the water.
I mean, you've been there. I have not.
I've been there. You gotta steer that. Like you have to be able to like make a manual decision on the fly.
Yeah.
You know? You got to.
Okay. I mean, we're crossing the Coast Guard. So now the three left, we've got Exxon, the federal courts, and Don Cornette.
Okay,
what do you feel? What does your heart tell you?
I want to blame Don Cornette.
I actually 100% agree with you. Wow. And I'll tell you why. He is the one in charge.
Yeah.
Of the Alaska Post. So Exxon, the president of Exxon, who is probably a greedy, you know...
SOB.
Exactly. I wanted to say another word, but I stopped myself.
Meanie.
Yeah, a meanie. A greedy meanie.
Yeah.
He hires a person, to look over this particular job. He's the one in charge.
Yeah.
And his response to what should have been his like number one priority was so despicable that it makes me believe that all of the choices he made prior were just as bad.
He was speaking for exit. Like, all the awful, dumb decisions that got made lead back to Don Cornette. I feel like Don Cornette was the one who was like, nah, don't fix the radar. It's too expensive. I feel like that was on his desk, and he's like, uh-uh.
Yeah.
I need another gumball machine.
I mean, I think we've settled it.
Yeah, I think so.
Don Cornette, you're going to the alarmist jail. Thanks for joining us, CC.
Thanks for having me.
The world is a better place now.
Oh, thanks.
In response to the spill, the United States Congress passed the Oil Pollution Act of 1990. The legislation included a clause that prohibits any vessel that after March 22, 1989, has caused an oil spill of more than 1 million gallons in any marine area from operating in the Prince William Sound. OPA also set a schedule for the gradual phase-in of a double-hull design, providing an additional layer between the oil tanks and the ocean. While the double hull would likely not have prevented the Valdez disaster, a Coast Guard study estimated that it would have cut the amount of oil spilled by 60%. Federal scientists estimate that between 16,000 and 21,000 gallons of oil remain on the beaches in Prince William Sound, and up to 450 miles away. Some of the oil does not appear to have biodegraded at all. On March 24, 2014, on the 25th anniversary of the spill, NOAA scientists reported that some species seem to have recovered, with the sea otter the latest creature to return to pre-spill numbers. Vote for who you think is to blame at thealarmistpodcast.com. And if you have any thoughts, comments, hesitations, we're thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Join us next week for David Koresh and the Waco Siege.
Erios.
Powered by Acast.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered.
Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.